Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 97.9 The Wren. The wake-up call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here with us again on 97.9 The Wren's Sunday morning wake-up call. Today, we'll be talking with folks from Literacy Volunteers of Charlottesville, Albemarle, Ellen Osborne, she's the executive director, and Catherine McCall, citizenship coordinator. Ladies, thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So, when I poke around the area and try and find different organizations that need some attention and bring questions into my head that I think would be interesting to the community and to some listeners. Recently, I found Literacy Volunteers of Charlottesville and Albemarle. And what brought this up is just literacy. Because I stumble across literacy, illiteracy, functional illiteracy, and I recognize that they all have their own path and definition, obviously. Ellen, can you tell me the definition of illiteracy versus functional illiteracy?
Sure. Mostly, I'll tell you that the key point there is that functional illiteracy is when you have reading and writing skills that enable you to manage your daily life, your living and your employment and all of that on your own. Beyond that, a lower reading skill would be illiterate. So functional is the key in which you can essentially function without help.
Does that mean that, and I guess I'll stereotype here a bit, that functional illiteracy may be someone at one reading level may be considered literate in one area of the country, maybe if they were a farmer, but would be functionally illiterate if they were in the suburbs and there weren't, and they were required to do more reading and communicating. Not slamming the farmers, just saying that learning how to run the tractor, and although I guess these days you have to do so much more. That's not true anymore, is it? I couldn't farm, so.
Yeah, it's more about can you read the manual that helps you fix the tractor?
Yeah, that's true. That's completely. I'm comparing that completely 1880s, not 2020.
Right. Right. It's not, can you go on YouTube and see somebody who helps show you how to fix the tractor? It's, can you read the manual? Can you read a recipe? Can you read the driver's ed manual that helps you get a driver's license? Those are things that bop you into the functionally literate category. Now, when we get into talking about English as a second language or English for speakers of other languages, Catherine may have some insight on that.
Oh, right. So when you think about trying to operate in a different language, your sort of sense of illiteracy and functional illiteracy really kind of blend together, right? Because you may well be literate in a different language, but trying to operate within a context where everyone around you is speaking English, all of the signs and instructions anywhere that you go are in English, then your sort of sense of not being able to function will be very prominent in your life.
And your literacy level is not necessarily an indicator of your intelligence either. We work with many highly intelligent individuals that just cannot read or write and speak English, you know, so they would be considered functionally illiterate, but in their home language and home country, they are, you know, aerospace engineers or something. So a lot of the preconceived notions about illiteracy and functional literacy and things like that have kind of been stood on their head as time has gone on and more people are staying in high school and graduating high school, and our community has been absorbing more people who do not have English as a first language.
By the way, apologies to the farmers out there. That's completely modern farmers can probably do a heck of a lot more than I could possibly ever do. So let me toss that out there. Go ahead, Catherine.
Yeah, I was just going to say also when you think about illiteracy, you're thinking specifically about reading and writing. But again, with our English learners who speak other languages, there's also the speaking and listening element, that it's not just can they read and write in English, but can they speak in English? Can they understand others in English? So it adds a whole nother component.
Well, let me just say again, we are talking with Ellen Osborne and Catherine McCall from Literacy Volunteers of Charlottesville Albemarle. You can go to their website, which is literacyforall.org, and that's F-O-R, not the numeral, literacyforall.org. I think I copied this off of your website because it says, in our region, I'm not sure whether that's meant to be the what used to be called the Thomas Jefferson District. So now is it the Blue Ridge District? In our region, there are 9,000 plus functionally illiterate adults, 14,000 adults without a high school diploma, 5,000 foreign nationals and growing, and about 20% of Virginians over age 25 who have seriously limited literacy skills. Is that all up to date and accurate, as best as you know?
That's pretty up to date, according to things like the American Community Survey and those types of census kinds of tracking things. It hasn't changed much in a while. In our region, I think that specifically we were thinking of it's Charlottesville, Albemarle, and contiguous counties, things that touch our county or city. So that's kind of what we meant by region there. So it's not incredibly spread out. But yes, there are people who, that many people who could use our services. And we always have a waiting list. I think I saw that there were 26 on our waiting list today. We train volunteers. We train just average people from our area to be to teach reading, writing, and English speaking skills to our clients. We train usually a little over 100 every year. With the pandemic, it's been a little bit less because we've been doing it virtually, and some folks aren't as excited about teaching virtually. So we train individuals to be volunteers. We give them, like, how many hours? 8 or 10 hours of instruction to get them up mm-hmm. to speed, to work with the individual to help them get to be to a point where they are functionally literate. And these volunteers from our community, they commit to 2 hours a week for about a whole year at least. So it's a long-term commitment that they make to another human being to help them increase their reading and writing skills. It's just incredible. I can't find 2 hours a week to mow the lawn, you know? And we have so many people in our community here. So many people in our community care about our newcomers to the region. and want to help them learn our language and learn our customs and learn our ways. And we often hear from our volunteers that they think they get as much out of the experience as they're giving in terms of their time and expertise. It's kind of beautiful.
Catherine, I think Ellen mentioned it earlier, that while illiteracy at one point used to mean the general population who hadn't graduated high school and who therefore couldn't read or write English, it has shifted its percentage to be currently there are more functional illiterates because they don't know the language. Did I remember that correctly?
Yeah, I think so. And also, when we think about, like, in order to function in present day society, there's a lot more reading and writing perhaps than there would have been in the days before the internet and computers, right? So an enormous amount of the way that we get information now involves reading. And so, and the way that we provide information, you know, you have to go and fill out forms online. You think about how many different things that you do that you involve, you know, providing information online or providing information to your, before you can go to the doctor's office, you get the online form. Before you can go and get your hair cut, there's an online form. And so if you think about the requirements in order to be functionally literate has really shifted, and also incorporates not only the language skills associated with doing things through technology, but also the technology skills. There's the whole realm of digital literacy that now is also provides barriers to a lot of people.
And we saw a lot of those issues during the pandemic.
What, digital literacy during the pandemic?
Oh, yes. That was a huge hurdle for us when we shifted to online instruction. Some of our students, and I will say some of our volunteers, were just not comfortable with computers and Zoom and WhatsApp and messaging and all of those things that they had to learn to continue their instruction. And Catherine was a huge help in this area. Catherine had just been on staff for about 2 months when the pandemic hit, and she jumped right in with helping us convert all of our instructional materials to an online form, and just was so incredibly patient with both our volunteers and our students, helping them learn how to use the technology to keep them connected.
Again, our guest today, Catherine McCall. Catherine McCall, Citizenship Coordinator at Literacy Volunteers of Charlottesville Albemarle, and Ellen Osborne, she's the Executive Director. Ellen, how did LVCA start?
It was about probably 40 years ago. There were individuals in town who could not read or write basic English. And I believe there was just a group of volunteers that started helping them. They got in with the city and the county, got some funding there. And it was originally a branch of Literacy Volunteers of America, which was a national organization started by a woman who's 100 years old now. Her name is Ruth Colvin. She's a great, incredible old lady. She started this organization, Literacy Volunteers of America, nationwide, and we were a chapter of that for a long time. And then at some point, the national organization folded and cut us all loose, and we became our own individual nonprofit in 2004. We are located at the Jefferson School City Center. And this is actually coming home for us, because at some point before this was the Jefferson School City Center, the literacy volunteers were over here doing this work. Then we were in the Tarleton building. So we bopped around a little bit, but we're quite settled now. So, yeah, a long time. Been doing this work a long time. And the shift in working with from basic literacy services, and those are people who are native to the area, to working with our newcomers who needed to learn English as another language, that really geared up probably about 10 to 15 years ago. I've been here 10 years, and it was pretty steeped then. So probably about 15 years ago, that switch started happening.
It's unrelated into how these worked out on the calendar, but last week we were talking with Harriet Kaur from the International Rescue Committee. Is there...
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a connection with other organizations such as the IRC, or is this a purely wait for someone to come to you and then you provide assistance?
Oh, we have great relationships with other organizations in town, including with Harriet at the IRC. We serve some of the same people, and a lot of their clients will, when they sort of graduate out of their program, they will come to us because they want to continue learning English and continue improving their lives. So we have a great relationship with the IRC. At one point, we ran a citizenship program together, and the IRC did the naturalization piece, and we did the educational piece. And so we were, you know, two sides of a coin there. And we also work with PVCC. There's the Thomas Jefferson Adult Ed, TJ ACE. They have classes, whereas we provide the individual one-on-one instruction. TJ ACE provides adult education classes. And sometimes individuals will be in a class but still want more help. So they will come to us to get additional one-on-one help to reinforce what they're learning in an adult ed class. And we all work together because the more services someone receives, the faster they move through the programs, and the quicker they can get on with their life and being self-sufficient and doing all the things they want to do without the language hurdle being in the way.
And we certainly also see it where, you know, students will be working one-on-one with a tutor and then start to think about, well, am I confident enough maybe that I could start taking a group class? And so then we sort of encourage them towards looking to TJ ACE and some of the other organizations. And as Ellen said, the partnership with IRC has been fantastic. It's whenever they are working with clients who are applying for citizenship, they give them our name and our contact information and say, you know, please contact literacy volunteers. And then similarly, when we have people coming to us who are interested in learning citizenship but have not yet submitted their naturalization application yet, we recommend to them, you know, you might want to think about working with the IRC if you want some extra legal support, or Sean Barreras also provides legal support for students who, clients who want to apply for citizenship. So it's really a lovely community. I'm guest speaking next week at a TJ ACE class to talk about the upcoming election. Just because we work, you know, with our new citizens, we try to make sure they have information about how to register to vote and that there's election coming up. And so there's a lot of opportunities for us to share resources and make sure that we're all working together to provide support to our population.
Sunday morning wake-up call here. Literacy volunteers of Charlottesville Albemarle. We're going to be talking about tutors and how the tutors are found and matched with a student. We're going to talk about problems with being functionally illiterate and solutions and some of the success stories. We also are going to talk about the citizenship program that the LVCA provides to the community. So hang tight, stay with us. We'll be right back. And here we are, Sunday morning wake-up call, talking about the literacy volunteers of Charlottesville Albemarle. Catherine McCall here. She's the citizenship coordinator, along with Ellen Osborne. She's the executive director. Ladies, Ellen, I'll let you start. Can we talk about some of the problems more in a more definitive manner? I mean, we've mentioned the being functionally illiterate in today's world with all the paperwork and so many other things in life that go with being functionally illiterate in 2021. But some of the other issues that I saw were poverty and the probability of prison and poor health. Is all that accurate?
Absolutely. Because if you have trouble reading and writing and speaking English, whether or not you are learning English as another language or if it's your native tongue, if you're functionally illiterate, your job prospects are not as great as if you can fill out paperwork, as if you can read an inventory list, that sort of thing. I was a tutor when I lived in Baton Rouge, and my student worked at a grocery store. He worked at the Piggly Wiggly. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of the Piggly Wiggly, but they're Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah,
he worked at the Piggly Wiggly, and he was up for a promotion. He stocked shelves, and his manager thought that he needed to move up the chain there. But the man could not read. He could not look at an inventory list and see the difference between French cut green beans and fresh cut green beans because he had never learned his letters. So he was stuck in the stockroom situation. And I think there are a lot of things that happen like that. It also, I think, probably affects your confidence at what sorts of opportunities you're willing to put yourself out there for. The problems are pretty huge if you're not literate.
I think I clipped this from a statistic from like 2019, but it was over 60% of adults in the U.S. prison system read at or below the fourth grade level. 60%. 85% of U.S. juvenile inmates are functionally illiterate. 43% of adults at the lowest level of literacy lived below the poverty line, as opposed to 4% of those with the highest levels of literacy. Those are crazy numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The opportunities that are there for you. You know, it's a different world.
So are the solutions graduating from high school or being part of an organization such as the Literacy Volunteers of Charlottesville Albemarle?
Well, let's not assume that because you graduate from high school, you are literate. Okay, we can hope. But I know that in the past, there have been individuals who do have high school degrees that are still functionally illiterate. But that's another whole problem that we won't get into today. But yeah, it your opportunities are just so much better if you can read and write, and there's no getting around that.
One of the things I really like about our community is that there are so many different paths to find support. So if classes are a better fit for you, or if one-on-one is a better fit for you, or if online is a better fit for you, that if people are willing and able to make that first step, and that is a big challenge. It's, you know, imagine how much confidence it takes to go out and put yourself out there and say, you know, I am not functionally literate. And then to be able to commit the time, because in most cases, as you pointed out, if you're functionally illiterate, the chances that you are at a much higher poverty level, you're maybe having to put together multiple jobs in order to try and make the rent and all those sorts of things, that that you are able to set aside the time to invest in yourself for your long-term development. But folks who are able to do that, it's wonderful that we've got so many different paths and ways of supporting those folks in our community.
But it's also not easy. I mean, that's why stay in school, you know, get it in school if you can, because having a job and still trying to find time to study and meet with your tutor or go to your class, it's so much harder when you're an adult. And it takes, I wish that we could just open people's heads and like pour in the knowledge, because it takes so much hard work to actually learn our language.
I'm curious if someone is, if there is any sort of self-embarrassment with people who come to your organization for help.
Not so much for those that are learning English as another language. A little bit, we have seen that some with those who did not finish high school or dropped out, or if there's a mental health issue or something like that with, you know, that prevented them from learning to read. I've seen more embarrassment with that than with newcomers to our country who are, just need to learn our language.
And I think, Rick, I think that's one of the nice things about literacy volunteers specifically, is that because we're a one-on-one tutoring model, that if you are self-conscious, if you are embarrassed, then you come and you come to us. Our services are confidential, and you have one person who's just going to be on your team and helping you. And that maybe that's what's going to help you get the confidence to then be willing to go into a class setting, as you know, you're moving on up the spectrum of literacy. But that hopefully that fact that we're providing our service the way we do makes it a little bit easier for those folks you're describing.
Again, our guests today, Ellen Osborne and Catherine McCall from the Literacy Volunteers of Charlottesville and Albemarle. And we're here today thanks to 97.9, the Wren. So, Catherine, I'll ask you. You've talked several times, spoken about the tutors. How do you find a tutor?
Well, so... In most cases, they find us, which is wonderful. We have a lot of amazing, wonderful, dedicated tutors who talk about how much they enjoy what they're doing, enjoy their volunteering. I was actually out at dinner this summer, sitting outside, of course, but overheard somebody at the table behind me saying, "Oh, and I've been working with this woman from Afghanistan, and we're working on her English, and la, la, la." And I turned, and I was like, "Oh, that's one of our tutors of the year." I hear her telling her table mates about what a great experience she's having. So a lot of tutors come to us through word of mouth. One of the amazing things about the pandemic is that we really have reached a kind of a new set of volunteers that are previously the majority of our volunteers were retirees, and were hearing about us a lot through word of mouth or from the radio, from other organizations. Ellen and one of my other colleagues goes out and sometimes meets with organizations, less so now, of course, during COVID, but prior to COVID. But during the pandemic, it's been a lot of folks, you know, are sitting in their homes and just Google search. They want to find a way to volunteer. They want to do something that feels meaningful, that allows them to connect with other folks, and they find us that way. And it's been We've had a lot more young professionals joining us, along with we've still got our amazing, wonderful retirees. But it's really broadened the group of people that are coming to us. We've had, I think, more folks who themselves have a recent immigration connection in their families. We've had some tutors recently who have said up front, you know, I came to this country initially as a child, as a refugee, or my parents were immigrants to our country. And so it's been really wonderful for that, you know, sort of sense of things coming full circle for those individuals, that they feel like I'm now able to pay it forward and help someone else who's in the same situation that I was or my family members were when they first came to this country.
Are any certifications or qualifications needed if a listener were to come to you and say, oh, I didn't realize that this was an opportunity, or now I have more time available than I used to have because I work from my house rather than driving to work. What needs to happen?
Right. So if they have good reading, writing, and oral communication skills in English, then they are qualified to be a tutor, and we will teach them everything they need to know to go from there. We have, as Ellen mentioned, we have that our team has put together a really high quality online. It's partially on Zoom, so that, you know, we're sort of getting that direct interaction. And then a little piece each week they're doing asynchronously, where we've got some videos for them to watch and some reflections that they can do. And so that over the course of 3 weeks, by the end of that 3 weeks, they come out really feeling confident about getting started with a student. We have really good instructional materials that they can rely on. We have what most of our tutors say, way too many resources, such that they feel a little overwhelmed, that we've got so much stuff to help them, that really it becomes the burden is trying to sort through and figure out which thing you want to start with. But we would love it if any of the listeners would like to come out and join us. We have information sessions every month. For people who just want to learn a little bit more, they're thinking about it before they make the commitment, they can come to one of our information sessions. Those are on our website. You mentioned our website address. We have a calendar there. They can always look on the calendar and see when our upcoming information sessions are. And there's also a whole sort of piece of our website that is for people who are interested in maybe becoming a tutor that gives more information there as well.
Do you need, by the way, literacyforall.org is the website. Catherine McCall, Citizenship Coordinator, is who we're speaking with at the moment. Ellen Osborne, Executive Director, Literacy Volunteers of Charlottesville Albemarle, both are with us today. So, Catherine, are you looking for a specific... A tutor who has a specific second language? So if I were to be a tutor, is it important or helpful for me to have a second language so that I can be assigned to someone whose first language would match a language that I could also communicate with?
So the vast majority of our partnerships do not have that sort of additional, you know, sort of resource to go to. So I think, honestly, the experience of having learned a second language, I think, is enormously helpful just for the sense of empathy and being able to sort of remember what it was like for you to try to learn another language or to be in another country. Those experiences, I think, are really helpful. But, you know, our largest student population right now is actually students from Afghanistan. There are a lot of different first languages in Afghanistan. Our most common language among our students is still Spanish. And so certainly there are some tutors who speak Spanish, I don't know, Ellen, if we have any tutors that speak Dari.
No, or Pashto. I don't think we do. Yeah.
If there's anyone out there who does, we'd love to have you join us.
Absolutely.
But there are some tutors who speak some Spanish, and they're paired with a student whose first language is Spanish. And certainly that's another tool in their tool belt. But it can also end up where the student ends up relying too heavily on knowing that you've got some Spanish. So in some ways, not sharing that other language is, you know, sometimes also a good tool, that it helps really push the student to try to expand their English in order to be able to communicate.
I'm going to take our break now, because I think the next set of questions is going to require more conversation than we should chop off halfway through. So Sunday morning wake-up call, Literacy Volunteers of Charlottesville and Albemarle, Ellen Osborne and Catherine McCall here with us. You can go to the website, literacyforall.org, learn more. We'll be right back. And again, Literacy Volunteers of Charlottesville, Albemarle, always on the hunt for new volunteers. And I guess new students.
Absolutely.
All the time as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the purpose of the organization, right? Doesn't do any good to have tutors if they're just sitting around waiting for somebody to call in and say, I need help.
Yeah, we got a waiting list of 26 students right now, though. So we need 26 new tutors today.
And that grows all the time. There's constantly, we're getting new students and new tutors, so that we constantly are just sort of trying to keep our head above water in having those students on the wait list not have to wait too long, because there'll be more coming behind them.
So I guess, Catherine, this goes to you, but if you get a tutor comes to you, or somebody says, I'd like to be a tutor, does that person go to whoever's next on the list as students, or is there some sort of system for best match between tutor and student?
So our program manager, Stephen Reed, is our matchmaker, which I always have songs of Fiddler on the Roof going through my head every time I think about his matchmaking process. But he really is thoughtful about letting our tutors identify, what are they looking for in a student? Are they really eager to work with somebody who's working towards citizenship? Do they really want to work with somebody who's at a very, they're just starting to learn English? They don't know any English yet. Or do they want somebody who's, maybe also taking classes but needs some additional support? Do they want to work with a basic literacy student, a person who's born and raised in Charlottesville, Albemarle, and is one of those people who came out of their education system, unfortunately, still functionally illiterate? And so trying to identify what is it that really speaks to the tutor. And then we also allow our students to identify, what is their schedule availability? Is there anything specific that they're looking for in their tutor? Some of our students are much more comfortable being paired with a tutor who's the same gender as they are, or they want a tutor who, is maybe closer to their own age, or they like to have a tutor who's older than they are, so they sort of feel like, because that's sort of the relationship you're supposed to have, your tutor's supposed to be older than you. Sort of whatever it is that they are bringing in terms of their sense of what they think is going to be a good fit. And so the tutors each have, after they complete our full training process, and they complete their background check, they then have a match meeting with Stephen, and they've pre-submitted some of those preferences that I described, and he'll pull out a collection of, a few students that fit what they're looking for, and also whose schedules availability lines up, and then gives the tutor an opportunity to sort of think about, well, who do I feel like might, sort of resonate the most with me? Because as Ellen said, it's a 2-hour commitment for a year, and so you have to want to build a relationship with the person who you're going to be committing that time to.
You mentioned having a double-digit number of students waiting for tutors. How long mm-hmm. have some of these folks been waiting to find a tutor?
Well, when new students come in, we let them know that it will probably usually be 1 to 2 months. We go through phases where it's, you know, it leads more towards 3 or 4 months. Sometimes we're able to, you know, a month or less than a month, you know, we're at a point where we've got a lot more tutors in the pipeline and we're able to get them linked up sooner. Or if they have a particular, you know, schedule fit with a tutor, you know, who has an unusual schedule fit. And so they'll end up, you know, sort of jumping the line just because there's somebody whose availability matches better than anyone else in front of them on the wait list. But what we do ask our students to do is once you come to us, we're going to ask you to commit 1 hour a week until you get your tutor while you're on the wait list. And there's to work on your English. And so there's a variety of ways that they're able to do that. We have computer carrels where they can come in and work on Rosetta Stone or another online program. We can give them a sign-in code so that they can do that in the comfort of their home, and we're able to track those hours and monitor their progress. They can join one of our conversation groups. We have some wonderful volunteers who lead conversation groups every week, and students can join those. And then we also have our citizenship classes. So while the student is on the wait list, they are beginning to do some work every week and to have an opportunity to show their investment in their learning and to make some initial progress while they're waiting to get matched with a tutor.
So the citizenship classes have been mentioned several times now. So let's hear more about that. The literacy volunteers of Charlottesville Albemarle, and as we mentioned in the first half of the program, we were talking about functional illiteracy, which seemed to be a lot about how to improve your life.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about citizenship and how that is that sort of a separate part of this? Do they tie together?
Great question. So at the end of the day, what we tell all of our tutors is that we are a student-centered program. And so if the student comes to you and says, I really want to try to get my driver's license because that's what's going to help me be more successful in our society. That's what's going to help me get a better job. That's what's going to help me, you know, prevent all those other negative outcomes that you were describing earlier that are associated with low levels of literacy. Then, you know, the tutor is going to work with them on helping them tackle the driver's test, right? There's a lot of English in the driver's test. There's a lot of reading, a lot of writing involved in preparing to be ready to tackle trying to get your driver's license, right? The same thing goes with citizenship. So if you're one of our students who's been working on trying to improve your English and one of your major goals is that you want to become a citizen, again, becoming a citizen has a lot of really positive outcomes in terms of your availability, your ability to get better jobs, your ability to get better housing, your ability to be more successful in our society are correlated with becoming a citizen. And so when our students want to become citizens, we want to help them do that. And so it's really become, I think, a, you know, sort of a bigger and bigger piece of what we offer. As Ellen said, as a larger percentage of our students has become immigrants and refugees rather than folks who were born and raised in Charlottesville. We still, to be clear, we still are more than happy to meet the needs of folks who were born and raised in Charlottesville and would love for more of those folks to come and seek us out so that we can help meet their literacy needs. But it is just currently the case that a much larger proportion of our students are those English language learners who have come here from other countries. And so we want to help as many of them as want to become citizens. We want to help them on that path.
And it's great because not only are they learning the English language component and the words and the vocabulary, but there's a piece of the whole civics and history that they're learning as well. And that's just kind of incredible to watch. I mean, the stories that we see and hear of our students who've come and got their citizenship and the way they feel about it, it's just really quite moving and, you know, really makes it all worthwhile. But it's another kind of learning that is, you know, but the civics portion and the history portion and the vocabulary portion, it's another kind of learning that's very, very discreet. It's not available out there in the community elsewhere that I know of. Catherine, do you know of other places that are doing that?
Here locally, well, so pre-pandemic, there were some other ways that you could access citizenship classes, but we were at least the first ones in around here, and in some of the other areas that are sort of similar, that are other regions, literacy regions, as the state defines the different regions for literacy programming, were not able to make that transition to online availability, and so we kind of became a hub for helping folks prepare to try and become citizens.
Okay, so who knows the test the best? Because what I'm curious Catherine. About is, okay, Catherine, she's Ellen's put you on the spot here, because you talk about helping to learn the test. I'm curious for people who don't have to take that test, like myself. I've always been curious about what is one of the questions on there that many folks couldn't answer. You're always like, what? Really? That's one of the questions?
Sure. Well, prior to the recent Broadway hit, I would have said the Federalist Papers supported the passage of the Constitution, name one of the writers. Which Hamilton was one of the writers, so Hamilton's a little more famous than he once was. There's questions about the number of voting members of the House of Representatives. There's questions about name two cabinet level positions. There's sort of early history. The Declaration and the Constitution and sort of all of how all of that process happened. There's the learning about the three branches of government and, you know, the years, how many years everybody's term is and how people are, how it's determined, whether senators represent, just citizens of their state or all people of their state, or does the state split in half and each senator gets half of the state? I think there's a lot of initial confusion around that. So trying to help people learn, you know, we have congressional districts, but then we have two senators representing the whole state, all people of the state. And then there is also some more recent history. There's questions about, you know, what, the Cold War and World War One, World War Two, et cetera. I do want to point out though that as Ellen said, there's pieces of the test that are actually English language focused. That people think of the citizenship test as those government and history questions, which, you know, are great. It's wonderful to help our students learn more about how our country works, because if they're going to become a citizen, we want them to, you know, be active citizens who vote and participate in our democracy. But there is also, there's a writing component, there's a reading component, and there's also a speaking and listening component, in which the officer, the USCIS officer, United States Customs and Immigration Service officer, will ask basically any and all of the questions that were on the naturalization application. They ask those questions orally, and the student has to understand and be able to answer those. Many of them are questions about, you know, your address and your employer and your prior employer and your spouse and so forth. But there's also questions like, have you ever been involved in genocide? Have you ever been a habitual drunkard? Did you ever use anyone 15 years old or younger to help in combat? All over the place. There's an enormous amount of English language requirement to be able to understand and answer all of those questions. And then there's also, you know, the sort of questions that are focused on, you know, when you take your citizenship oath, if the law requires it, are you willing to bear arms on behalf of the United States? Are you willing to perform non-combatant services to help the U.S. armed forces? So helping our students understand if you take this oath, this is what you're committing to. Do you support our Constitution? Do you support our form of government? And so they need to be able to know, you know, what is it that they're agreeing to when they become a citizen. So that's a lot of language skill and a lot of history and government all blended together.
Amazing. It really is amazing. So we know now that you go a little bit beyond tutoring and helping with the citizenship program. Is there any help in finding jobs, or do you work, do businesses, employers come to you for others, anything of that sort?
Not really. We try and stay focused on the mission of literacy. And, you know, we did really branch into the citizenship instruction. Our main focus is the one-on-one tutoring, but obviously we branched into the classroom situation with the citizenship because no one else was doing it. But we think there are, you know, enough resources out there for job searches and job fairs. We will supply information and make referrals, but we don't do much job placement at all.
One of my favorite stories that we share in our tutor training is just, you know, an anecdote about a student who was not able to read her work schedule. She was learning English as an additional language, and she couldn't read her work schedule. So she would come in with her tutor. She would bring her work schedule and have her tutor help her learn how to read her work schedule. So, you know, over time, she became, you know, very confident with reading her work schedule. And she spoke the same language as a lot of other of her coworkers. So she would go in and teach the rest of the folks how to read their work schedules and make sure that everybody else knew what their, you know, what their schedule was. And her boss noticed this leadership role she was playing because of what she had been doing with her tutor. She was able to play this leadership role with her coworkers and then became promoted and moved up you know, had a much better job, much better pay, and a great deal of pride. And so that's the kind of job-related support that we do provide that is right within that. That sweet spot of what we're able to do as a one-on-one tutoring literacy focused organization.
All right. A lot of the lessons are based around work life, things that students need to know for their work. We don't presume to know what an adult student should learn. This is very student centered. They tell us what it is that they need to learn to have a better life. You know, we're not going to teach them just a bunch of stuff that we think is cool. You know, this is very self-directed by the student. I need to learn to do X, Y, and Z, you know, whatever that might be. And if they find success and they want to learn more, you know, we can direct them to on a ton of different paths of things that they could do, but we definitely start with a student-centered approach as to what does this student want to learn, what does he or she need to learn, because it's so difficult to make the time to do this as an adult. They really have to be interested and want to do it, so we let them direct what it is they need to learn.
I think another sort of common area, in addition to that sort of helping them with language that they need for work, is language that they need to help support their kids in school. So a lot of our students want to be able to communicate with their children's teachers. And so helping them be able to send emails, understand emails that they're getting from their children's parent, children's teachers, excuse me, and be able to go into a parent-teacher conference or do a role play before they're going to be taking their child to a doctor's appointment. They can do a role play with their tutor to make sure they feel like they know what language they need in order to go in and successfully have a conversation with their child's doctor or their child's teacher. Those sorts of things, I think, are so important to helping people be able to really succeed in all aspects of their life within our community.
All right, so real quick, we're down to about 60 seconds. I know that you get funding and from various areas, people can always make donations. What is WordPlay? You got about 60 seconds.
WordPlay is a trivia night. It's held at the Paramount. It'll be March 31st, 2022. Individuals form teams with their friends or their coworkers, and they compete against each other for the most to answer some of the most ridiculous trivia questions on all sorts of subject matter. It's just a hoot. It's a great time to be with your friends, and it is a fundraiser for literacy volunteers.
When you go to the website, there are people all dressed up in costumes with funky names for their team.
Oh, yeah.
People, there's also a competition for the funniest name, for the funniest
right.
team name.
So if you're not good at trivia, you can at least don a really nice costume and win the costume award, if nothing else.
So when is this again? In March?
March 31st, 2022, at the Paramount.
And if you want to get an idea of what's going on, because I couldn't tell it was for trivia, but then I got caught up in trying to read the names of on the signs for team names. Literacyforall.org for the Literacy Volunteers of Charlottesville, Albemarle. I want to thank our guests today, Ellen Osborne, Executive Director, and Catherine McCall, the Citizenship Coordinator. Ladies, thank you so much. Everything you do, incredibly important to our area.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Rick.
All right. We'll be back again next Sunday. Thanks to the Wren for giving us this time.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on Real Oldies 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for The Wake Up Call, only on 97.9 The Wren.